Welcome to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM. Join us as we celebrate the sparks that ignite, the events that inspire, and the songwriters that create. With your host, Steve Robb.
Based in West Coast, Florida, singer-songwriter Frankie Ray has risen to the top, performing at numerous songwriter festivals across the South and writing and recording her original music. In 2021 alone, she booked 388 gigs. Needless to say, she's hard to keep up with, but thankfully we have her here with us today. Frankie Ray, welcome to Song Creating.
Hello, how are you?
Just fine this morning.
Good.
And you are coming here from Tampa area?
Clearwater, yeah. Greater Tampa area, but technically okay. Clearwater. All Dunedin, right. If you want to get really specific. So if you're out of town, Dunedin is a little bit north of Clearwater.
I know exactly where Dunedin
is.
It's a wonderful town, great music town. And
oh, yeah.
Now are you one of the ones I would see in the bars as I'm walking through playing music?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, I play a lot at a lot of the downtown bars here and in Clearwater too. So that's how I make my living.
The farmers markets and all of that stuff.
Oh, I love those. Yeah, those morning markets when everyone's just out shopping. It's Saturday. Yeah, it's definitely cool. It's a cool vibe.
So are you a Florida native?
Kind of. I was born in Ohio. My childhood was spent mostly in little north of Dayton, Ohio, in a little town called Greenville. It was this very quaint, just Midwestern town right on the border of Indiana. We didn't even have a shopping mall. We'd have to drive over to Indiana just to go to the mall. But then when I was about 13, I moved down to Florida, which was culture shock for me because the town, I mean, you know, Brandon, Florida was where we moved to. And that's not really that big of an area, but compared to Greenville, I thought it was like big city. And the first time I went through Tampa, I was like, wow, I can't believe that I'm living like in a city now. So it was definitely it was a shock. But I've been down in Florida for a long time. I moved here in 2002. So I'm definitely, I'm into Florida now.
In Ohio, did you participate in music, you know, programs
at
school?
I did, definitely. Yeah, I had, I was very active in choir, and I, you know, all like the local little children theater plays, I would always get involved with those. And because I had such a musically inclined family, every family reunion and, you know, all the weekends, I'd go over to whoever's house and there's someone always had a guitar and people were always singing. So definitely growing up, that was a part of my world, you know. So, and then it carried on into my school years. I joined theater programs and choir and voice lessons and, you know.
So when you moved to Florida, I'm just curious about the cultural differences between Ohio and Florida, of which there are many.
Yeah.
And how did that affect how you were, what you were playing, what was it starting to appeal to you?
Not really. It was more so, you know, I listened to a lot of the stuff that my mom listened to. You know, I listened to Joni Mitchell, the Beatles, Ricky Lee Jones. And then, of course, you know, Alanis Morissette and Jewel. That was always the stuff that my mom listened to. So that's just kind of what I played. Now, in this time in pop culture history, that was when Britney Spears started coming out and Christina Aguilera. So I listened to Britney and Christina just as much as I listened to, you know, Fleetwood Mac or anything like that. So I definitely, the music I listened to was more, less about where I was living and more about what was popular on the radio. But I was so lucky growing up to have a family that liked good music and they took it seriously and they weren't just, you know, like the fact that, you know, they'd hear a Fleetwood Mac song and they'd automatically know. And I see some people who just have no idea. You know, I'm very lucky that I had a family that taught me those things and taught me the importance of keeping that music alive.
So the same music you were listening to in Ohio, it sounds like it was pervasive. So it didn't really change that much.
Yeah.
When did you start finding your own voice? So was that after Florida, after you moved to Florida?
Yes, that was pretty much after I moved to Florida. I want to say probably around high school, I started really focusing on, especially Alanis Morissette. She keeps popping in my head because I just remember I used to read her lyric books and the way that she would write is just so good. And Jewel has a way with words too. So that was, I kind of started to fall into that. And I started basically kind of teaching myself how to play guitar. But like I said, I had family members that all played. So it was easy to just go to them and have them teach me a few chords. But I didn't take lessons or anything. I just kind of would practice those chords over and over and try to learn those songs. But my style became, I guess, I'll say a little bit darker during my teenage years. Like, I didn't really write a lot of love songs. I mostly wrote songs like just teenage angst. Because I was that kind of kid. We're all black and like moody.
Definitely an Alanis Morissette influence there.
Yeah, but. Yeah. So that was kind of my own voice, was mostly through like Alanis, and she has a lot of angry songs. So, yes. And then there were other, you know, popular like harder rock bands at the time that I listened to, like the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. And oh, and then my brother, I gotta mention him, like, for developing my own sound, because at this point he had started his band Foxy Shazam, and years later they kind of had, you know, some hits on the radio and MTV and all that stuff. And yeah, it's pretty cool band, but they were definitely, especially in their early years, very experimental, very heavy rock and screaming. And like, so, and I idolized my brother. My brother is everything to me. So I just wanted to be like that. So finding my own voice was, around my high school years, just experiencing, you know, teenage angst and learning to actually say your truth in songs instead of having to sugarcoat it and write about a boyfriend or something.
So were you playing in bands at that time?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I look back at some of my high school bands. It's so embarrassing. But I had some friends, and they would, you know, they were the kids after school in the hallway with their guitars, and like da da da, and I would go sing with them. And yeah, I had a few, but you know, we didn't take it that seriously. My focus was mostly chorus and show choir and musical theater.
Okay, so you couldn't really wear the spiked hair for the choir.
You couldn't really do that.
You didn't go for the spiked hair.
Couldn't really do that. No.
What was your, were you playing guitar in the bands too, or just
for those bands? I'm trying to remember a lot. There were a lot of like random little like bands, I guess. Yeah, I should probably put it in quotes, but one of them I played guitar, my friend Randy and Corey. Yeah, they mostly played, but I would sing, but sometimes I would play guitar with them. But yeah, there were a few other little like high school, like, oh, we got a band. And then this was the era too, where you could like, you know, those discs and you write with a Sharpie. So I remember passing those out at school and feeling just so cool. Like, this is our album. Yeah.
Well, I think you could say, didn't Taylor Swift get started that way?
Yeah, they all did.
Sure, you know, you're all passing that stuff out, hoping somebody will listen to it.
Yeah.
So this was high school. So then, keep going here. This is entertaining.
No, it's fun. So I started taking show choir specific. I took it very seriously. I remember the first time I danced with my show choir, and I was so nervous. And I was one of the only, it was me and one other girl and I were the only freshmen who got into this group. It used to be you had to like go through the ranks, and you couldn't even be in this group until you were a junior. But that year, the choir teacher decided to do something different. It was just me and one other girl. And some of the seniors didn't really like us at first, because like we shouldn't have been there, but we got into the show choir. And I just remember seeing these, you know, people who were, they were only, you know, 3 or 4 years older than me, but just admiring them. And it was a whole new world, just harmonizing with them and dancing and singing. And then I got even more serious into musical theater. In fact, when I graduated high school, I planned on doing musical theater. I was gotten to a performing arts college, and that's what I was going to do, and Broadway. And, you know, I got really serious in high school. I had a few leads in plays, and I was always in the next production. So I really liked that. But then I kind of realized if I went into musical theater, there's this unspoken thing where it's almost like your success is more dependent on them and the casting directors than you. I mean, you could be so talented, but it's so competitive, you know. Mm-hmm. And living in New York, I just hear some of my friends are, you know, doing that, and it's them and six other people crammed into this tiny apartment, and they're each paying $1,000 apiece and the auditions. And it's just like, I don't know, it just seemed too much. But then I realized, like, well, wait a second, I've been songwriting, you know, since I was a kid, really. Like, you know, the songs I wrote when I was a kid weren't that great, obviously. But, you know, I was like, maybe I should try to give songwriting a go. And then I just kind of started writing a lot. This is all still in high school. I started, you know, just writing music. And that kind of became, you know, during the day I would do theater and choir. And then at night I would just write music. And on the weekends, play it for my friends and go to coffee shops and open mics. And so I did all that. And then I kind of, graduation came around quickly. And I just, you know, I said, I'm not going to do theater. And then I didn't know what I was going to do. And thought about going to a Berklee College of Music, and the move and stuff didn't quite, wasn't going to work out for me. So I just enrolled in a local state college here and then kind of left music for a little bit, just focused on college, and then got back into it because I realized I couldn't stay away. Part of my life, you know. Hope I didn't ramble too much. No. I'm like, am I making sense?
not at all. Absolutely. So did the... you said you were writing even from an early age.
And, yeah.
And, are we talking about the early teens?
Early teens. Yeah. Yeah, early teens mostly. Yeah, when I say I wrote when I was a child, it was more, I remember I had this little keyboard and I would just kind of just do stupid. It was mostly songs that I already heard and knew, and I would just kind of rewrite them in a way, like, because I didn't really know, so I don't really count those. But the idea of writing a song was a part of my life when I was a child. You know, I knew what it was, I knew the craft, and I admired people who were good at the craft and are, you know, skilled. So but yeah, I want to say early teens was when I really started, like, just writing and being honest in my writing.
Yeah, I think there are people at that age who just are called to write and called to come up with something new. They don't want to play someone else's song.
Yeah.
And, or, you know, they do, but which is fine, but they also just have this desire to express themselves somehow. And I think I fell into that as well, because, you know, in junior high, I'm playing with a rock band and nobody's, you know, all we're doing is covering everything. And I threw a couple songs out there, just got laughed at completely, you know, but then I also moved to a new location, got rid of those, that bad influence, group. And then people started gravitating to it, but I still found I was really like the only one who I knew who was really writing songs, and that there's gotta be more, but you know, some people just come to it later, but it is just something you're drawn to do.
Yeah.
And you can't stop.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's when I look back in my childhood, I remember, in fact, Jules' Pieces of You album, I just remember opening up the lyrics and I would just lie there on my belly in the living room floor at like 8 years old. And I would read her lyrics and try to figure out what they meant. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I was literally breaking apart a song and saying, I wonder what this is about. So to be eight and to be doing that, I don't know. It was always there. I would do the same thing with Alanis Morissette's albums. Supposed Former Infatuation Junkie had a lot of really great lyrics. And that's one that I revisited in high school later when I was like, wow, she's really just bearing it all, which is cool. I love that. But yeah, I was called to write, and I didn't know it when I was a child, but I think about it, it's like, well, you were eight picking apart these lyrics, you know, and you were so fascinated with reading these song lyrics. So looking back, it's like, oh, okay, wow. Yeah, that was there. It was there. It was always there all along.
You mentioned the open mics and all these things that you were playing. This was like during college time?
High school into college. And then even into adulthood, actually, when I decided to make music a career, I was doing open mics.
Is this in the Brandon area, or had you?
Yeah, high school was in the Brandon area. So for those listening who don't know, it's greater Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is huge. There's all these different towns. But in the Brandon area, I was going to some open mics in high school, and that was a lot of fun. And then in college, there were a few local college coffee shops that would have open mics, so I'd go to those. And then, you know, later on in college, when I started making music a career, most of the open mics I go to were mostly in the Tampa, like downtown Tampa area, because those were the places I was trying to actually play gigs. So
when did you find that you were actually going to make it a career? and you were able to make it a career, I should say.
Yeah. You know, so in 2013, I was still in college. I was actually entering graduate school. So I'd already graduated with a bachelor's in art history, and I was like, well, I can't do anything with that, so I'm going to go into education, elementary school education. So I did this like graduate program for that. But as I was doing that, it was 2013, and I don't know what it was. I just said, I'm going to just make a music Facebook page and, you know, get back into this again, because I really miss it. I was doing some open mics, but I didn't really have any like gigs. And I just said, I really want to do that. And I played this show. It was like an acoustic battle of the bands, didn't pay anything. It's at this place in downtown Ybor. If you're not listening, Ybor is a very special place. Or if you're listening and you don't know of Ybor, it's a very special place. So I did this battle of the bands thing there, and I didn't win, but it was fun just to go play my own music. And at this time I only had like maybe 5 originals that I was really comfortable with. One of them was Perfect Song, which you can listen to even now on iTunes or wherever you get your music. It's on there. So I did that, and I became friends with the guy who was running sound. And then he had some more free shows for me at that same venue and said, hey, you know, I like your sound. I'll let you know next time I put together an acoustic show. And so I did that for like a year. And as I was doing that, I was making sure to get footage. I was bringing, you know, professional camera. I said, hey, I need to get some pictures at my next gig. I was getting audio recordings, and I was just kind of building my little press kit package. You know, I didn't quite know what I was doing, but I knew I had to have footage. So I was kind of doing that. Well, yeah, I guess maybe not consciously, but yeah, I started, you know, taking pictures and then putting all that up on the Facebook page. And then I said, I should probably get a website. So none of the quality for all of my stuff, none of it was really professional, but it was there, you know? And then I'm kind of thinking of how it's, oh yeah, I started just Facebooking all these different restaurants and venues, and not a lot of places got back to me. But there was one place that kind of stuck, and I played there for years and years and years later. But that became like my every other Saturday gig. It was like my first gig, you know, so I'd go there, and I still didn't know that many cover songs. But so this all was over the course of a couple years. And then in the summer of 2015, I met a man named Frank Dancy, who is such a dear friend of mine. I'm playing at his wedding next month. He's a drummer, except now he mostly does guitar, and he has his own solo career thing going. But when I met him, he was just drumming. And I got called by some friend who said, hey, we need a fill-in at this gig, and there's a drummer, and he needs a front person. And so I went, and he and I just clicked. And then I don't know if it was some like divine intervention with us connecting forces, but once we started playing together, once we decided like, hey, we should start getting gigs together. Because when we did this one gig, our first one, we hadn't met ever. I was just going to do a fill-in blindly. And then we clicked, and then he and I started messaging people together. And then we started, you know, taking photos and videos of us playing together. So now it wasn't just me with my guitar. It was me and a drummer. And then it was both of us just like, you know, guerrilla warfare, kind of just like messaging all these places. And then after a couple years, the gigs just started coming in. And then I was like, well, you know, I graduated with my master's in education, and I was like, well, I could go into teaching, or I could kind of keep this thing going and see where it takes off. And so I decided to keep playing gigs. I looked at my finances. I said, okay, well, I'm at this point, I'm getting about 3 a week. That's enough. I could pay my bills with that. And then the 3 a week turned into like 6 a week, and then 2 in a day and 3 in a day. And I didn't even go into teaching. I have this degree. It's sitting right over there. I haven't even used it, but I have it. So that's important. But yeah, that's kind of the whole era where I decided I could make it as a career. It was mostly throughout graduate school when I started getting tips, and it's like, oh wait, you can make a lot of tips doing this. It's like, oh wait, they pay what? Okay. So I don't know, it was a cool time. And then eventually, next thing I know, I look back and I'm buying a new calendar for the next year to write all my gigs in, and I'm like, wow, I've already done this for a full year. And I'm looking through the pages, and I'm just like, wow, there's look at all these gigs that I've done, and there's more, and this is my job. I'm a traveling musician who performs at restaurants. And looking back, it seems like it all just happened at once. That's why it's so weird to like talk about the journey, because it was a whirlwind, but it's cool. I like where I'm at now. I'm happy, you know?
Yeah, sounds that way.
Yeah, well, I am. It's really cool.
You've got to have a great feeling of accomplishment with this.
Yeah,
You know, and have been one of those that has been able to avoid having a full-time job.
Yeah, you know, and I'm so blessed. It's like the fact that I could do this and then have extra money left over to fund my personal projects, like writing. I mean, the fact that I can write and record and produce an album on my own with all of my musician friends and then release it into the world and then do podcasts talking about the songs. Like, it's just such a cool thing. I don't know. It's just awesome.
But that's a perfect segue, Frankie.
Isn't that cool?
let's talk about your song a little bit. And let's talk about the one that you suggested here. You call it A Song for Dad.
Yeah.
And it's heavy. It's deep and it's emotional. And give us a little bit of the genesis of, you know, this song, but maybe where you were at the time
I'll start off. I chose this song for this podcast because I really liked your concept of just how a song is born. You know, it could be an event or something. And a lot of my songs, I know we had talked about doing a song called Theodora, but a lot of mine are kind of just like a collection of a bunch of events. And then I develop a thought about some bigger thing. Like Theodora was more of like, I am woman, hear me roar kind of thing. And, you know, but there was one event that kind of kicked it off. But, you know, so that's why I chose this song, because this is one that I have where there's an actual isolated event and a story. And so this song is called Song for Dad. I wrote this during that graduate school period where I was doing, you know, some of my free original shows and open mics. And this is actually one of the songs I also played at that first Battle of the Bands that kind of kicked all of this off for me. But anyway, so my parents divorced when I was very young, probably about five, maybe I was technically six. My father had a lot of issues, his side of the family in general. They kind of just, you know, I don't know, whether it's something in their head, or I know they have substance abuse problems, and that whole side of my family just never really, you know, knew. But I do, I'm very sympathetic to, you know, drug addictions, and I understand. So I explain this with no hatred or blame or anything. But I think my dad had a lot of deeply rooted issues that he never really addressed or came to terms with, substance abuse problems. And I know, you know, his parents weren't the greatest. And so I knew all of that throughout the years, but my parents split up when I was very young, and my father just kind of disappeared. Like, he would call every now and again when I was a child. And my mother, who's amazing, she never kept him from me. She wasn't one of those parents, it's like, you're never gonna see your kid. She was always very like, okay, let's try to get your dad to call. Like, she really was like actively trying to get him to be a part of my life. And I wish I had an answer for why he wasn't. I think it goes back to just substance abuse problems and just issues that he had, money problems. He was that kind of person who could never really hold on to a job. And, you know, there's some, you've met people like that. It's just like, it's so easy to, you know, be a part of life. I don't know, but for some people it's not. So I went my whole life really without speaking to him, you know, maybe randomly on Christmas or something. And that was my whole childhood. And then when I was, I was 15. Yes, it was December of 2005. I was about to turn 16, and I got a call. It was Christmas Eve. I got a call on the phone, and my mom was out doing last minute Christmas Eve stuff. And I answered, and it was a gentleman. He said, hi, I'm looking for a, and he said my name, you know, said Frankie Steele. And I was just like, I heard it. And I was just like, is this real? And again, this has been like 10 years. I hadn't even 10 years since my parents split up, 10 years since I heard from him. I was like, what? This is wild. But I was so shocked, and I didn't know what to say. And I just said, who is this? And he said his name. And I said, you have the wrong number. Because, you know, it's 15, about to be 16. I had no idea what to say or what to do. My mom wasn't there. I was all by myself in the house. I immediately went to, like, you know, what do I do? So I said he had the wrong number. And my birthday was coming up. I remember my birthday is December 31st. So he said, Merry Christmas, and I hope you have a Happy New Year. I don't know if he knew it was me. He probably did, but I don't know. And immediately after, I was like, should I have said that it was me? But it's like, what do I say? You know what I mean? What do you say 10 years later? And so I called my mom first, and she's, you know, she was upset, you know, ex-wife upset too, just like, so he didn't pay child support ever. So she just was like, he's calling you now on Christmas Eve after all these years. Like, she was frustrated. And then I call my aunt, and my aunt's like opposite mother hen, and she's just like, oh, this is so beautiful, it's Christmas, blah blah blah, call them back, this is lovely. So I'm like, okay, I've got these, the two strongest women I know, one's angry, one's thinking it's a beautiful story. Then I call my cousin, and my cousin's like, hey, you don't have to call anyone back, you don't have to feel anything right now, like, you're 16, like, don't even, this is a lot for you right now, your dad just called you, it's been 10 years, stop feeling bad about this, you know. So I forgave myself. I said, you know, you're right. What am I supposed to say? You know, was I supposed to tell him that it was me? So then years go by. Okay. So anyway, that was when he called me. And then I think a few months later, so this would have been January of 2006. So a month later, we actually found out that he had passed away from a drug overdose, methamphetamine. Wow. Methamphetamine. So, yeah. So when I learned that news, it was like, I just talked to him a month before and I told him he had the wrong number. It was like, oh, he just, like, it was the craziest thing. But then again, this is someone who I hadn't seen in 10 years. So the emotion, I didn't grow up like even saying the word dad, you know, because he was never around. So it's almost like I didn't really cry or anything because I didn't have that. I didn't have any real memory of a father to remember and feel sad about, you know, like if it was my mother, obviously I'd be devastated. And I have all these memories of me and my mom and all of this. But with my dad, I didn't really have that. So when I found out he died, I just kind of like chose to not, I told myself that I didn't really care. I kind of told myself that maybe I have a self-protection or what. But I remember years later when I sat down and I started thinking about it, and that's when this song came about. I was remembering all those things and I was like, you know, he's the one who ended his life in a hospital bed, not talking to his daughter, you know, he was the one who was the real victim. I wasn't, you know, I got to go to college. I had family members. By this point, I was getting back into music. I had a guitar. It's like, I'm looking at my life and it's like, you know, I have a really great life and I should be really thankful for that. And I had this like almost moment of forgiveness for my father for leaving. And that's when I, you know, because for a while before I was kind of bitter, you know, it's just like, yeah, my dad, like, whatever, you know, kind of had a chip on my shoulder about it. But then later I said, you know, this is so immature of me. Like, he's the one who, like, poor guy, like, how sad is that? You know, if you're in a hospital and you're here, it is Christmas Eve and you're calling your daughter on the phone and she's saying you have the wrong number and it's Christmas Eve. And it's just like, oh, it's so sad. So I remember I just like, I really felt bad. I forgive myself for not answering the phone because I understand I didn't really know what to do. But, you know, when I wrote this song, this was me just kind of saying, like, it's okay. Like, if you're listening, it's okay. I know that you kind of left and you weren't around and you chose to kind of disappear, but it's okay. I understand you poor thing. Like, I... you deserve to have someone hold your hand at the hospital, you know, just like anyone else. And I'm sorry, I couldn't have been that person. You know, now if you were to call, I'd be there in a heartbeat, you know. Yeah. But at the time, it's just like, 16, I don't know. And this, I wrote this 10 years later. So I was about 26 then when I wrote this, 25, 26. And that was when I started playing music again. And this is one of the first songs I wrote after I kind of, when I was in college, I wasn't writing a lot, but yeah, when I wrote this song, that's just trying to pick out some of the lyrics.
I think you had a lot to process.
Yeah.
And I think this was your processor.
Yeah, it really was. And I felt this was one of the one songs that I wrote when I felt better afterward. Mm-hmm. I felt better. I don't know. It was just relieved, like comfortable with myself, forgiving myself for not, you know, agreeing to talk to him. And I just felt better. It's like this song, I don't know. If there's such a thing as people listening from the other side, I hope he, I write actually, yeah, that's the lyrics. I hope you sang along. I hope you sing along. And, you know, yeah, this is it's a sad story, but the song itself is very hopeful. And
it was cathartic for you to.
Yeah. You know, one moment he was there and the next he was gone. But I was so young when that happened, you know, you don't know when you're six, you just go along with everything. And then years go by and it's like, oh, I realize, oh, my life's different. My dad's not around. My friend has a dad. Okay. You know, and then you start learning that, but then you just become almost desensitized to it. So when he passed, I was kind of desensitized. I was just like, well, you know, I don't know. But then, yeah, that years later, when I look back and I wrote this song, it was almost, I understood why I had the feelings that I had. I knew that when I was young, I said, look, you know, I was 15. I shouldn't have felt guilty about it, about hanging up or not telling him he had the wrong number. And so writing that song, it was almost like a half apology. I mean, I open it up with, I owe you a song, because it's like all I have to get. I mean, I can't do anything else right now besides just write about you. That's it.
So did this song kind of flow for you, or was it, did you go through a lot of editing?
Not really. Actually, that's an interesting question, because writing it, you know, I wrote it on my guitar. The original version sounded similar to the one I sent you. Like I did mention, this song is on an early album of mine called Chapters, which is like an all acoustic, you know, self-produced thing. Of course, the key was a lot higher. And then a bandmate that I met a few years later, he was a very, very highly skilled pianist. And he always said, the joke was, we Adele'd that song, because it was right when Adele's Hello came out. So that real dramatic, like, you know, those chords, like that real tension, the piano and belting vocals, like Adele's Hello had just come out. So we turned Song for Dad into like an Adele kind of thing. He played piano and it sounded fantastic. But when we recorded that, you know, it was the first time I had ever been in like a real studio. I wasn't real happy with my vocal performance. We didn't have a lot of funds to like go back and redo stuff. So if you go out in the world and on the internet, you can hear a couple different versions of this song. One is me on guitar and then the other is piano. Not too happy with it. I sent the one I sent you. Yeah, it was just me. It was just acoustic. And that's right. What I want to do. I am going to release this song this year. I'm shooting for the fall. And I want it to be just me and guitar, maybe some vocals. I might have my boyfriend Brandon add some cool little spice here and there. But this song will be re-released and re-recorded. So the song itself didn't have a lot of revisions with writing it, but it's recording. The versions in which it's been recorded have changed and evolved over time.
Did you have a journal that you look back on when you, or did this all come from memory?
This was all memory. I do journal, and I wish I still had some of my teenage journals. I bet there was so many great things in there, but I don't know what happened to them. You know, you move and lose stuff and stuff happens. You don't have space in the car, you know. This happened all at once. This was one of those songs. I just kind of almost like a stream of consciousness kind of thing, because I was just being so honest. I was like, I need to just apologize and let you know that I like I said, I never doubted you. I know you're a good person. You just had some issues. You really
so
did.
What are your,
you deserve.
What if we were to put a label on the what you're normally writing? Okay,
yeah.
Aside from this very personal song, do you have a style or a thought?
Yeah. So, going back to some of my early influences, we talked about earlier when I like actually found my voice in music, mm-hmm. was going through a lot of Alanis Morissette lyrics and Jewel lyrics. And one of the things that stuck out was just how honest they were. They weren't trying to make things rhyme. They weren't trying to like just think of something clever. It was just completely honest. So all of my songs are alike in that regard. They're all very honest. I might not sound like the nicest person in some of my songs, like you listen to Theodora, and I think taking my chances, I've had people say, oh, who made you mad? And it's like, no one really made me mad. It's just, I think, like I said earlier, there's a bunch of little events that all kind of are like an umbrella over, or there's, you know, I don't know. They all kind of add up to things, like with Theodora's, me being offended by something some person said to me. And then the song kind of is about, you know, female empowerment. And so a lot of my songs are definitely more, I'm trying to think of the word, spicy. I don't know. I'm a little bit more, I'm a little bit more like in your face kind of in my songs. I don't really hold back. A lot of them are poppy, really, you know, kind of upbeat poppy. I like to do a lot of major chords and walk downs and, you know, cool things. There's a lot of glitz and glamour and a lot of the songs that I write.
Do you find these go over well in the bars when you play?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times in the bars, people aren't necessarily listening to like the words. A lot of them don't even know if it's, I can say in the mic, this is an original, and then they won't even listen because it's a bar, you know. But like songwriters festivals and original shows, I did one recently in St. Petersburg at a guitar shop called Seven Seas. And my friend said in the microphone after, she was just like, she's like, man, remind me to never make you mad. Don't come out and song. And I was like, oh, I don't want to be seen as that person because I am really lovable and nice and bubbly. But I think with songs, that's the only way, because I'm not confrontational. Like, I cannot be the type of person to just like stick up for myself in your face, because I usually like, then I start stuttering over my words and then I get all emotional and worked up, and I'm not a good person with like face-to-face arguing. I am not like that at all. So maybe that's why a lot of my songs sound like there's so much stuff bottled up, because in my real world, I just am so passive. And I think in my songs, that's when I'm truly honest. It's just, it's like my journals, you know, I don't want to hold back. So I'm really bad with saying what I feel, because I'm always just worried about, how do I say this in a way that's nice? How do I say this? And then sometimes what ends up happening is I don't say what I want to say because I was too busy worrying about the other person's, which I think everyone's like that. And I'm not hating on the fact that I'm like that. But in my songs, sometimes there's no one to impress except for me. And that's what's so freeing about it. And that's what I'm really going to make sure to keep it like that. You know, some people ask, what if you get signed to a label or whatever? And I don't want to be one of those artists that just writes, you know, to impress other people. I want to make sure what I'm writing is what I want.
Right for you. But, you know, music can be so, cathartic. It can be expressive. It can help people just get past, you know, situations. It can help them express their love for. I mean, there's so much that music provides for us.
Yeah.
You know, it's why not provide a little bit of means of communication?
Yeah, absolutely. And being able to express yourself through poetic words instead of like productive communication words face to face. You know, you talk differently, and
which if may I were be to less like poetic.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when you, I know some people who are great at expressing themselves when they're talking in a group, and I listen to what they say. I'm like, wow, how do you think of that? Like, I'd have to sit down and like write it out. I'm not that quick of a thinker when it comes to that. I usually like deer in headlights. So, yeah, that's with songs that I can take my time and really express what I need to express. And I feel better afterward. Every single time I write a song that's really coming from the heart. I have some silly songs, but most of them, it's like, it usually comes from a place of conflict or, you know, something that if I just express it, or if I make a Facebook post or something, I feel like people will take it the wrong way. But if it's in a song and it's got a chorus and it, you know, it's, I don't know. I think it's a little less, intimidating maybe. See, I'm bad at talking. I use hand motions. Like intimidating? I don't know.
All right. So Frankie, tell us, you've got a website. It's frankieray.com. And it's FrankieRaye.
Yes.
Correct?
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Middle name is Ray, and Frankie.
Yeah. it's a great, and that's your stage name. Your last name is Steele, I guess.
Yes, Steele. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Frankie Ray, thank you so much. It's just a joy talking to you. We're talking early in the morning. It's like 10 o'clock, and she's still like, you know, bright and bubbly. And
I've been doing good with waking up early lately.
Good for you.
Yes.
All right. We're going to close with listening to Frankie's most recent version. And considering there's a number of them, there still may be more to come. But this is just Frankie and her guitar and her beautiful tribute, A Song for Dad.
Steve, I appreciate it, man. I had so much fun. I'm a huge fan and awesome. I love this kind of stuff. So thank you.
Great, Frankie. Thank you.
You'll sing along. You were on the other line. Scared I sent you away to lie on your own. Your ruins and your last days. What would I say? I'll remember you that way when I was young. For hours, time had stopped long enough to build a memory of you. In the end, you were lying all alone until you ran while I moved on. A part of you, I survived. I lived the dream you never had, and I hope. So nice to meet you again. What would you say if you saw me here on this stage? Would I make you proud? Even though you missed every mile, would you try to build again? 10 years in a 3-minute song, and I'd ask how he felt when you knew you were dying with no one. In the end, you were lying all alone till you end while I moved on. A part of you survived. I lived the dream you never had, and I hope you know I never doubted you. It'd be so nice to meet you again. Ooh. you even know my name? The name I denied when you cried. Oh, I'll answer your call with all that I have left. The fuzzy dreams and your voice in the photographs. Oh, now you're just a photograph, 'cause in the end you were lying all alone. To your end while I moved on, a part of you I survived. I lived the dream and never had, and I hope you know. Oh, I never doubted you, and it'd be so nice to meet you again. I owe you a song. I'm sorry, and I hope you sang along.
Thanks for listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete. If you like what you hear, you can find Song Creating on your favorite podcast app or at songcreating.com. To check out my own music, go to steverobb.com. And until next time, keep a song in your head and music in your heart. Thanks for listening.